Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to another edition of Blog Talk Radio's UAW Factory Whistle Show for September 19th, 2021. We have Scott, we have Jimmy, and we have Scott now, and I see Carrie and Adrian are in the bullpen, so go ahead, you two. Fire away.
Hey, Scott, what's up?
Go nada, nada. How's it going for you today?
Good. Just landed back in from the great, upper, lower northern Michigan. I went up to Alpena for the weekend. It was damn cold this morning when I woke up, 37 degrees. But other than that,
dang.
Good. Hey, what I am hearing a lot, Scott, and you're in the plant still. Tell me what you're hearing. I have a lot of my, I shouldn't say a lot. I only have a few plants left that I know are in my old plant because how there ain't many left. They're under 300 in there. But,
wow.
They don't understand the referendum vote and what it could mean. They're just not getting the whole, the spiel. What the hell's going on there?
My goodness. I mean, you get an opportunity to vote for who you want to be president and vice president.
I know, but they're not – what I'm saying is they're not even – the people in there working, most of them don't have a clue what this means is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Scott, that's exactly right. People do not understand. I've got some emails that don't want to be read. I can't read them because they've got things in there that can't be said, but they don't understand what's going on at all. Let me get Adrian on real quick. I did have Adrian on. Hang on for a minute. It's coming, Adrian. Okay, you're on, Adrian. Hello.
Hello, Adrian.
I think maybe that's Carrie. I don't know. Carrie, is that you?
Yeah, it's probably me.
Oh, okay, Carrie. You have the 734. Okay. I recognize that sexy voice. Go ahead.
I'm listening to you guys.
Okay, go ahead.
What are the people in the plant telling you over at Ford? Do they understand truly what this means?
I think there's a lot of people, even I can't speak really for the new hires, but I mean, as far as people that are been there for a while, I don't, when I talk to them, they kind of act a little confused about it, about what this means as a vote, just like you said. I don't think they really understand, like you said, what kind of opportunity this is to make a change. I definitely try to explain to them.
Well, us older people, we were schooled in a lot different type of union. Back when I'm going to bring this out, and I think Adrian and everybody else will kind of agree. We always had caucuses within our own locals. There was, the administration caucus was there, don't get me wrong. But in the good old locals back in the day, they weren't owned by the administration caucus. We ran our own damn locals.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that shit changed, I'm going to say, in the early, mid-80s when our concession started and they started getting more than one damn pension, is my own opinion. Take it over. As Adrian here, I would like to know how everybody feels about that.
Well, I'll tell you, I remember there was I call them organizations because they were organized. They're very organized. And I belong to something else. I belong to Direct. What the hell was the name of it?
New Directions.
Yeah, New Directions. Thank you. And we had the jackets. We had a lot of people. A lot of people in the plant. And I don't know. Yeah, Jimmy's right. About the mid-80s, it was gone. I don't know how it happened or why it happened. But it was a damn good thing we had them.
Well, that, and also we had handbills every week by these two, three groups
Right.
They actually held each other's ass kind of accountable.
That's right.
Because they could only get through so much bullshit and it would call up. But when they're all on the same time and all these document, for, you know, whatever you want to call them, Doc 46 appointments, I'm going to call it jointness. We went to hell when our union went to jointness, in my humble opinion.
Well, that's when it disappeared. Let me get 219 on, guys. Hang on here. 219, you're on.
Hey, brothers and sisters and family. This is Scott Holdison. How are you guys doing?
Scott. Pretty good, Scott. Hey. Nice to hear from you.
Hi, Scott. Hey, we're just talking about this, and Carrie said that people don't understand what one member, one vote is.
Well, what it is a historic opportunity for the membership to take control of their union. Right now, you know, we have a system of delegates, electing delegates to go to a constitutional convention to vote on our behalf. And a lot of times the delegates get swayed by promises of staff jobs or, you know, threats against their plants to go along with the administration caucus. And, you know, we have a historic opportunity to correct the course of the UAW and put the power back where it rightfully belongs with the membership. You know, just voting is only one part of the process, though. We have to then be able to hold our elected officers accountable.
Scott, let me ask you something. Are you guys doing union meetings now in person?
We are, yeah.
Okay.
We had one yesterday.
So we started up, I believe, a month ago. And I went to last month. Today was another one. I did not go to that one. When you guys are doing your union meetings, I'm just a little kind of curious. Now, I see from this, not the, today's, but the last one, it seems like the chairman and his staff, basically, nobody can really oppose anything that you know what I'm saying, a question.
So if you make a motion, you're ruled out of order. If you're for instance,
they were taking questions, and there was a member who brought up why a grievance that he put in wasn't being answered, why, you know, I literally watched the chairman pretty much berate this person. I was just floored.
Well,
and
they
simply was wanting answers to why nobody has given him any answers to his grievance, you know. And as I've read his grievance, it's really is a grievance that is, it's not even his own grievance. It's for most of the people working there. But he just didn't want to address that. I was taking it. And it turned really ugly. And to me, that's why I didn't go up to the union meeting, because I just couldn't handle that today. No way.
Well, I understand, and that's a tactic that they use to try and dissuade you from going to union meetings. But, you know, what you need to do is like you guys were talking about, a caucus, get a group of people together that are like-minded and go to that union meeting and try and take control of it. You know, there are rules of order to get things done. Now, as far as, you know, arguing about a grievance, a particular grievance, you know, I can understand that, but that's not something you're going to be able to do anything about at the union meeting unless, other than inform the other members that this is going on. And that's
what
happened.
Well, I think that's what that person was doing. He was informing the membership that was sitting there that if you do have a question about grievances, or if you did email your plant chairman or international, nobody's going to get back with you. If you don't jump on board with what they're trying to sell you with that specific local, you're going to be an outcast. That's what I've seen.
Well,
I've seen that with my own two eyes. And if I see it, I wonder if other people see it too.
Well, I've become a bit of an outcast at my local union too, for, you know, trying to do things that are against the grain that the, you know, the people that are sitting at the head table don't necessarily agree with. So, you know,
exactly.
So for instance, yesterday at our union meeting, we were in new business and this was our first union meeting in 2 years, by the way. And, I made a motion to have an election for open positions. We have a sergeant at arms vacancy, open because our sergeant at arms passed away, more than a year and a half ago. And, also we had, vacancies in one of the committeemen and alternate positions, and there may be some more because of non-attendance at union meetings. So I made a motion for that. As soon as I made that motion, first of all, the president couldn't hear the person that seconded it. She had to actually stand up to second it. And then they called the quorum, and you should have seen the committeemen running for the door like rats on a sinking ship.
So, amen, yeah, brother.
It's funny, but it's not funny. And the thing is that I've put them under a microscope because back in August of last year, I requested that they start holding union meetings online. And they refused to do it. I appealed to the international. They denied my appeal. I appealed to the public review board. And they approved my appeal. So last May, they were supposed to have a union meeting online, and instead they had a webinar where the membership couldn't interact, and they made sure that if you didn't get the link when you first signed up, you weren't going to get a reminder. There were 400 people signed up, and only 30 showed up because they didn't get a reminder. Didn't know how to get on the meeting. I had people texting me asking me, how do I get in this meeting? So, you know, they did that. And then the following month, the PRB ordered them to continue having them until online until we could do them in person. The following month, they could have done it in person because the restrictions had been lifted in June. But, you know, they just didn't have any meeting. So I pointed that out to the public review board and say, hey, what are you going to do to enforce this? So right now they are within a hair's breadth of being put under administratorship because of their lack of democratic procedures. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, you have to keep the pressure on them. If you don't keep the pressure on them and you just run away, then it's their union, not yours. You have to take ownership of it.
Yeah. Well, it's hard, I think, too, as I've transplanted. This is my third plant. So it's really hard. The people that – and I know there must be other people out there. I'm just speaking for myself, but there's probably other people out there like me that have been transplanted in the bonds that you had at the first plant that you were at. Once you got transplanted to so many plants later, because I did come from a strong union, but once you've been to so many different unions, it's just a different thing.
I understand completely because, you know, while I haven't had to go through that, a lot of people at my local have. I mean, we have people from the closed St. Louis plant, the Ford plant in St. Louis. We have people from the closed Twin Cities plant. We have people, and some of them actually ran for office and won. But you know, we have people from Kentucky when The Louisville Assembly went down for retooling. We got a bunch of people up here instead of being laid off. And then most of them went back, but not all of them did. So, and we got some from Wixom. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but this is your union. You have to take ownership of it. Don't let anybody tell you that it's not your union. If they do, tell them go jump in a pile of shit.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. It's just really hard to go against the grain when you can't get it. You know, you reach out, you try to get some answers. You know, just like me, I asked why we couldn't do the Zoom meeting. I had the vice president say, oh, you know, we can't do that, or we can't do that. We don't need, we're worried about what might get out. What do you mean what might get out?
They tried
that
same argument with me. Yeah, they tried that same argument with me, and the fact is they didn't check IDs when we had in-person union meetings. They didn't check to make sure that everybody that was there was a member in good standing. You know, now when we want to have online meetings, they want to make that the standard when they weren't enforcing it to begin with.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, Carrie,
so,
go ahead, keep going, Scott.
That's why the PRB ruled in my favor. They could see through their arguments, and they were bullshit arguments.
And I hate to say, Carrie, we all need to understand one thing, and Scott does, and many of us do. When we go to our union meetings, we need to go in there knowing they're going to pull these games. So we need to have one more person than they have. So when they run for the door or they call the quorum, and when their committee man or whoever, all their team at my plant, we sit down and all the shop committee and the Joe boys or whatever you want to call them would stand along the walls behind you and along the sides for intimidation purposes. You know, and you look at it and you get sad. And like you said, I knew people in my plant at Flint that had been in seven different GM plants in the course of 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like you said, you go into a strong union, and the worst thing happened to me is when I came to Flint, I became part of what they call amalgamated local. To me, that is the most biggest cesspool our union could have ever allowed, in my humble opinion. And I'll let it go right there. So you guys can take over. Thank you.
So anyway, you know, I just wanted to talk about a little bit about the referendum, if that's all right. Can we switch topics?
Yeah.
Okay, so this past Friday, the Monitor came out with some new deadlines. The UAW and the Department of Justice went to court. They made a motion to the court to extend the deadline for voting. Well, when it all washed out, the Monitor came up with new deadlines. So they're not going to be finished counting ballots until November 29th. That was the extension date in the motion that the UAW and the government made. So that's now extended from November 12th to November 29th. But one thing, if you still want to be an advocate for one member, one vote, or for the convention system, you have a few more days. I think it's, I don't have it in front of me right now. I can look it up, but I think you have until September 22nd. It was September 15th. So instead of no longer being able to sign up to be an advocate, you still can. So we got a few more days on that if anybody on here is interested in signing up to be an advocate. What do you get when you become an advocate? You get to be able to send out mailings, send out emails to the global email list, and you get to participate in a webcast forum that is going to be put on by the Monitor. To advocate for one side or the other, kind of like a debate of the issue on the referendum. So if anybody's interested in doing that, I'd say, you know, today or tomorrow, or, you know, you don't have much time left. Email the monitor. It's UAWMONITOR-election@jenner.com. And you email that monitor saying you want to sign up to be an advocate for either one member, one vote, or the convention system. And they'll send you a form back to fill out, and then you're in the on the side of advocating.
I'll give that email address again, Scott.
It's UAWMONITOR-election@jenner.com. And it's on the monitor's website, UAW Monitor.
By the way, you can check grocery store hours before heading out.
What? Oh, we can't hear whoever that was. We didn't understand it.
I'm sorry. You weren't supposed to. When he said Jenner, all of a sudden Alexa lit up telling me they had a damn song. I'm sorry.
Oh.
See, even Alexa knows how important this one member, one vote is. See?
Apparently.
Amen, brother. I'm like trying to shove that girl up.
Now, Scott.
But thank you for the info, Scott, because we need that shit out. Like I said, I got people still in metal fab that, well, really, truly, what does that mean? I says, you'll finally get a chance to pick people going to your region. It'll just... It gives us a hell of a lot more of a democracy in this. And I just don't think the younger generation, well, they don't know the goodness of what a true union, in my opinion, again, can work and do in a community when we're doing the right things.
Got it.
You know, what's going on now?
Can nobody hear me?
Democracy.
Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi.
Okay. Scott. Anytime you want to do a show before this election, the vote rather, just get in touch with me. And anytime you want to do it, or anybody you know that wants to do a show or to explain things, you're more than welcome to. Every night or day before, you know, not Saturday. That's all.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. We may take you up on that.
Okay.
So the other thing is the ballots were supposed to be mailed out October 12th. They're now going to be mailed out on October 19th. So there's, you know, they pushed a bunch of these dates back.
Oh, okay.
But if you go to the monitor's website and hang on just a second. Let me see if I can bring it up on my phone, and I can tell you exactly what the website address is.
Well, I've got www.uawmonitor.com. That's what I find.
Yep,
there's uawmonitor-election@jenner.com.
Yeah.
That's the one, huh? Okay.
How you spelling that Jenner?
J-E-N-N-E-R.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll be giving that out. There's a phone number, too. Should we give that out, too, also?
Certainly give that out.
Okay.
I advise, and that email address, by the way, is the same email address. If, for instance, if you're a retiree and your local is closed, you don't have a local to call up and say, hey, fix my address, I didn't get a postcard, right?
Right.
So you'll email that email address, uawmonitor-election@jenner.com, and tell them that your local is closed, you'd like to update your address because you didn't get a postcard.
Oh, okay. That's good news, because we were told just the opposite. Adrian, you're on 816. I'm putting you on. So, welcome. Adrian, how are you
doing?
Good
evening.
Good evening. Oh, that's Missy.
Missy.
How you doing, Missy? And Adrian.
Hi, good. How are you?
Groovy. Okay. Take it away, guys.
Exactly. Dan, I'm going to step off for a minute. I'll call right back in. Thank you.
Okay. I got you covered. Scott, wake up.
Is Adrian there?
Yep, I'm here. I'm here.
What's up?
I'm here. I muted myself.
Okay.
I want to thank Scott for calling in and taking an opportunity to maybe field a couple questions and stress the importance of one member, one vote.
Yeah, there's people that emailed me that didn't understand it, and I don't know how they didn't understand it, but they claim not to, so I'm glad Scott called in too. And yeah, I know, folks, you check on our thing on Blog Talk. It says we only have a couple hundred followers or something. That's if you join Blog Talk. Those are the people that joined. You have to join sometime, yeah, I think, to write in the chat room. But if you want, you can join. If not, we're on about 7 different platforms. Rumble, Twitter, there's some I never even heard of. GETTR, and that's a new website that you can join. So we got a lot of reach. And I don't know how many people listen. I honestly don't. So there you go.
Well, it's good that there's a place to come to, talk about these issues, because I'll tell you what, the administration caucus, the International Union, is trying to keep this hush-hush. They're doing everything they can to not inform people. Our UAWD financial secretary, Eric Truss, is on the general counsel at Local 600.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked if local would put out an informational pamphlet about the referendum, advocating for one side or another, just letting folks know that this is coming up and, to check your, make sure you update your address if you didn't get a postcard, right?
Right.
They refused. They refused, but they're controlled by the administration caucus. You know, Bernie Ricci, longtime administration caucus guy. He led the Ford negotiations last time. He chaired the Ford negotiations. So, they're doing everything they can to not inform the membership. So it's up to us to get that information out there. And I want to thank you for having this show and inviting me on to speak about it.
Not a problem. You know, I would think that somebody would, maybe a red flag would go up when they realize that our now President Curry is against this one member, one vote. He's openly come out and said he's against it.
Of course he is, because he wants another 31% fucking raise.
We filed a complaint with the monitor over there at post time.
Wasn't he supposed to be speaking on that for the rule?
Exactly. We filed a complaint because that's a violation of the rules. He's the international president. Now, if he's having a private conversation with somebody, he can advocate all he wants as long as he's not on the clock, supposedly. But to advocate openly in a press conference that he called. Mm-hmm. Is a violation, we feel is a violation of the rules. Now, the monitor said they're appraised of it and they're taking appropriate action, whatever that means.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But that's definitely one point where
right.
if the referendum doesn't go the way we want, that's a possible way of getting it overturned, is to keep track of these violations mm-hmm. and make sure that, you know, we have filed the complaints so that we have a paper trail. You know what a paper trail does.
Right.
Yeah. Because it sounds like he didn't read the rule.
We know what a paper trail does, but they know what fire does, Scott.
Let me get 989 on. 989, you're on.
Yes.
Greetings to your rabble-rousers.
Oh, there he is.
I got a couple of, I guess, couple questions for Scott. What is the rationale for keeping, at least their spoken rationale for why we should keep the current system? And but I'd like to say that there's no way we'll ever get good contracts again unless we get one man, one vote, because we have no way of removing these people, and they just give management whatever they want and then shove it on you if you have to vote three or four times to get it right. So, you know, we'll never have any control over the kind of contracts they bring to us until we have the power to remove them. But what is their rationale for keeping the system? I mean, I know what their personal reasons are that they want it, but what is their spoken defense of the system?
Basically, they've said it offers proportional representation to every UAW local, and everybody UAW local can participate, but they failed to mention that there were 225 locals that did not send delegates to the last constitutional convention.
Yeah.
And
a lot of them are
that's out of 575.
Yeah.
Many of them could not afford sending a delegate, could not justify sending a delegate to a convention where the outcome was basically predetermined. So what was the point of sending a delegate if you're not going to be, your point of view isn't going to be represented?
Well, is the monitor aware of how the convention is has run? You know, even if we can get the system overthrown, can we work with a monitor to get some revisions? You know, it's just crap that in order to vote for Gary Wachowicz in 2014 that I had to go up and stand at the front of the auditorium and give my name and local and whatever and say I was voting for Gary. I mean, not that that personally bothered me, but it would intimidate a lot of people. And we don't have a secret ballot. We don't even have, as far as the issues, all we have is a voice vote. So, I mean, the people up there conducting the meeting can say their resolution passed even if 75% of the people voted against it. You know, so
well,
is he aware of what a crappy thing the convention is itself and the way we do the voting?
I'm not sure how aware he is, but I can tell you this. We do have the ear of the monitor. We've had three Zoom meetings with the monitor and his staff, and we've had multiple email exchanges making suggestions, filing complaints, you know, and, you know, we have much of that much of those posted on our website. If you go to uawd.org, there is a page on there that has most of our communications with the monitor. I don't think our most recent ones are put up there yet, but yeah, it's up there. And we intend to advocate for a fair process. If it goes to, let's say, for instance, that the referendum fails.
Yeah.
You know, next thing is going to be we're going to have a convention system election again, but we're going to, you know, be talking with the monitor about what needs to change to make that system work better. And, you know, secret ballot is going to be a one way to help make it work better.
Right.
Also a lower threshold for roll call votes.
Yeah.
So the membership can, you know, have a chance to see how their delegates voted on issues of importance.
Yeah, I think that's really important because I don't know. I in 2014 was when we voted to increase the dues, and I don't know how many guys I talked to that went down there with the idea they weren't going to support it, then they ended up supporting it because, you know, the pressure that's put upon them. But one thing I'd like to know is why did the monitor even agree to this vote? I mean, our union is more corrupt than the team.
Well, that wasn't the monitor. What? Yeah, that wasn't the monitor. That was the Department of Justice.
Okay, the Justice Department.
Yeah, they came up with the consent decree. They negotiated with the UAW to put that consent decree in place.
Yeah.
But let me.
Well, I mean, we've got more people in jail than the Teamsters had, and they forced the Teamsters to
become Democrats.
Actually,
we don't. But.
Oh, we don't? Did they have 15 of them all at once? Or?
I'm not sure how many they had, but they were tied in with the mob, and they were blowing people's cars up. And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, it was really bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, we argued for that to be included in the consent decree, direct elections be just mandated.
Right.
We didn't get it. Yeah. But,
you know why
you know,
the
we
reason
can,
was.
We can look at this as a blessing in disguise because it gives us an opportunity to learn how to organize to win this referendum. And that organization that we're building to win the referendum, we're going to use that to build our caucus and try and win some elections in this next round of elections. So, you know, it's all been you know, it's been a lot of work and a lot of effort, but I think it's all going to be worth it in the
right.
end.
Scott, you got an email from Jack from Local 602. He wants to know, Scott Holderson, how do you start your own caucus? Why don't we, you know, he says, why don't we start our own caucus? Jack from 602. Thanks, Jack.
Well, tell Jack he can join UAWD. We have started our own caucus, and actually one of his co-workers is on our steering committee. Cody Zaremba is a member at large on our steering committee, and our dues or membership fees are $25 for a year. It's pretty cheap, we use that to support our website and to help purchase flyers, but you know we need a lot more than that to do the kind of work that we're doing. But so we have fundraisers for that. But I'd encourage Jack to join our caucus. But if that's not what he wants to do, he just needs to talk with his coworkers, find like-minded people, and advocate and build a caucus from his coworkers.
Okay. Jack, there you go. Can't get a better answer than that. That's UAWD?
Yeah, UAWD.org. And
okay.
Right at the top, you'll find the join button. If you want to see our communications with the monitor, there's a page for that. You know, it's in the menu, in the drop-down menu.
All right.
How many people on here tonight wonder if the monitor listens to the show? Or
they
if
do.
Would even come on? Or would even come on?
I'm sure they do.
Well, I'm sure the monitor would not come on. But they may be monitoring the show.
I know people.
And if they're monitoring the show, who gives a shit? Because we're not speaking anything other than the truth.
Right.
Well, I hope
we're not doing anything against the rules.
Yeah.
Exactly, and I hope he is in a simple fact because, you know, we already know they monitor the show because, I mean, so many other things like you said, Scott. So I think we're being heard, and I'm praying everybody's understanding how important this is for the – like I said, I believe it's for the survival of our UAW.
You're right, Jim. It is.
I believe
this is an important step towards accountability for our union, but it's only one step. So, you know, after the referendum passes and we have one member, one vote, then we have to make sure that the system that's put in place is fair and allows for, reasonable ballot access. You don't want to be in a position where nobody can get on the ballot. But you don't want to be in a position where the membership has to vote on, 100 people for each position either, because then it's going to water down the results.
Right.
So, you have to get it down to a handful that the membership has to choose from, and there has to be, some way to do that. So, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here.
No.
There are other international unions that have direct elections, famously the Teamsters, but so do the longshore workers, so do the machinists, so do the steel workers, so do the postal workers. So, we can look at their constitutions and take the best ideas from each of them.
Well, several years ago, Stephen Yocas wanted to merge with two other unions to form a large union, but those two unions wouldn't, I think one of us, the machinist union, wouldn't merge with the UAW because of our corrupt system. Those two unions both directly elected their officers, and they didn't want
anything to do with it. Yeah, it was the steel workers and the machinists. I remember it well.
Yeah. I couldn't remember which the two of them were, but I think people need to understand that we'll never have strong contracts again unless we have control over who our leadership is. And the convention system actually worked very well till the union started being influenced by joint funds. That's another thing we need to get a handle on, how joint funds is used and, what it goes to pay for. Because that's what management is used to undermine and corrupt our union.
Right.
How many union, so-called union reps do we have in the UAW that are paid by management that's filtered to the union through joint funds from management?
I mean, it's nothing but
a bribe, basically. I mean, it's legal,
exactly. But
it functions like a bribe. They're buying influence into our union. They've corrupted
the thought process. To give you some kind of way to measure that, the UAW was required to repay $30 million to the joint funds for those reps that were in the joint, being paid through joint funds, but we're not doing any work for joint funds.
Okay.
Okay.
Scott, I have a question for you. Now, I know that you have a lot of outreach with different locals, different people. So what are you hearing on your end as far as how much support you think that you're seeing with the one member, one vote? I'm just kind of curious.
Well,
people reaching out from different locals.
There's overt support. Are you talking about support from leadership? Are you talking about membership support? I think it's a very popular notion with the membership. But a lot of leaders in auto locals that I'm sure you're aware have been under the influence of the administration caucus, and they're worried about getting product in their plants if they don't play along. So that's part of the equation there. But I'd say overall, we're getting a good response from the membership. And then there's, people that don't want to put their put themselves out there to have a target on their back. A lot of us don't care. Yeah. Oh, I know it does.
Well, Scott, how many people other than you are willing to put a target on their back?
Yeah, I'll put a target on my back. Fuck them.
No, I'm talking about people who actually have something to lose that are in local leadership that have the kind of worries you're talking about. I mean, there's two things they worry about. Number one, losing the spot in the pecking order. And then they're the ones who are actually legitimately concerned about getting work into their plant. And they both feel like they got to kiss International's rear to get what they want.
Well, you know, Local 1097 in Rochester, it's a GM, GMHC. I think it's GMHC, but it's a second-tier plant.
Okay.
And the president of that local is come out in favor of one member, one vote. He's participated, Dan Maloney, he's participated in, some of our webinars.
Okay.
He's stepped out there. Brian Schneck from Local 259. Now, those are mechanics and auto mechanics at new car dealerships in the New York City area and the
okay.
New York City metropolitan area. They go into New Jersey and Connecticut, too.
Do people in other sectors, leaders in other sectors, understand what a corrupt mess the UAW is? Because a lot of these have not been in, had an opportunity to be influenced as much by joint funds as the manufacturing sector.
Right, and in higher ed, we're really strong in the Harvard local. We're really strong in the local University of California system local.
Okay.
Presidents of both of those are UAWD members.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. Because I really wondered about them because they haven't seen the effects of the corruption yet like we have. You know, they haven't had their pay cut in half and lost pensions and all that like we have.
They've seen
different effects.
Yeah, they've seen different effects.
Okay.
First of all, they have, that top-down, they really don't like that top-down approach to, contract negotiations. They like open bargaining and things like that, which is really refreshing. But also, they live and die by organizing because the graduate student workers are not required to join the union. They join on voluntarily.
Sure.
It's kind of like, the Janus decision is made public sector right to work. A lot of them fall under that, and they have to organize on a continuing basis. And quite frankly, our two staff organizers are former graduate student workers. That know how to organize and have been a tremendous help to UAWD.
Oh, okay. You mean people that are on international staff as organizers?
They're on local staff.
Okay. All right.
So, they have to have local staff organizing all the time. They have to have an organizing department to keep their membership numbers up.
All right.
Hello.
Is there any other questions out there real quick?
Yeah. I just think people need to understand what is going to work. I think people don't understand how bad the contracts are that we used to get. There's a lot of new members. They don't understand what we once had. That's
well, you got to tell them.
Yeah, I do.
These companies are having trouble staffing.
Mm-hmm.
They took everybody out of body shop the other day to go over to trim and chassis because they couldn't run trim and chassis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of our contract. That's because these people see that, hey, this is a union contract. I can make more, working at Walgreens.
Yeah, because they're not.
Do easier
the big three aren't competitive. they're not competitive. Who's gonna,
they're not wage competitive. You're correct.
No, they're not wage competitive. But who is going to go into a hot factory, especially assembly factory, where they might get a pee break every couple hours?
Oh, no,
and
no.
They're gonna
this is what you do like me. You get a note from the doctor.
But I'm saying that shouldn't even, if you're working at McDonald's, you're going to ask, hey, you know what, can you just go ahead and wash the fries for a hot second because I got to hit that bathroom. You still have the opportunity to use the restroom.
You should always have the opportunity, though, Carrie. They shouldn't treat you like children.
100%
agree. But they do.
100%, yes. But I guess I just wish people would understand that this opportunity is really important for your wages.
I think there's more people that understand this opportunity than what we actually realize.
God, I hope.
But we need to be spreading the word too. We can't assume that people know what this opportunity means. We have to let them know what this opportunity means, and that means talking to your coworkers. Especially those young ones that are temporary employees that are on a 2-year probationary status. Let them know, hey, my probation was 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It took me 18 months to get to full pay.
Yep.
What's your track?
I think
10 years?
It took me 90 days to get to full pay. 90 days.
Yep, me too.
How about the fact that people working in the plant for half of what I made 12 years ago when I retired? That's when it gets me.
That's so
crazy.
Yep.
And then they're supposed to save money to retire on that wage.
And buy health care when you're 60-some years old.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We have an opportunity to change it and make things different for them, for us.
Better.
And, you know, it's all about knowing your value because those plants cannot run without the workers. Your value.
Yep.
Yeah. And for the retirees, you're involved in this. I remember when I hired in, I heard people complain on the line that they, you know, we get pushed into these, not voting, really voting for the president and vice president, and the same people get into the stage there and sit down and vote for everything we're not for.
Yeah.
So this is your chance to change
Victor.
It. For the first time in our UAW life, we can change it. We better take advantage of it.
It's been tried at multiple conventions to change it, and it's failed in that process. So this leaves it up to the membership, and we need to use this opportunity to organize and get the membership excited about making changes. And the referendum is just the first change.
Is this vote going
to
be monitored?
Yes. It's being conducted by a vendor, Merriman River, and it's going to be monitored by the monitor and the Office of Labor Management Standards of the Department of Labor.
Good.
Oh.
And we can have observers. And we can have observers for the vote.
Good.
Two things real quick. Kind of touch on what Carrie and you were talking about. Victor Reuther once said, shame on the corporation, Victor Reuther once said that the workers are the backbone of the corporation, and shame on the corporations, and shame on the union for treating us anything other than that.
Yep.
That's right.
Guys and gals, brothers and sisters, union family, it's time for me to bid you adieu, and thanks for having me on.
Okay.
And we'll talk again soon.
Hey, Scott. Can I ask you one more question real quick before you go? So if you understand, we kind of got to get a flip on this a little bit, not devil's advocate flip, but another look at this. What happens if we don't pass the referendum?
Well, then we have to, first of all, if there's, funny business going on, we have to challenge it. And
right.
if that doesn't happen, then we need to organize to win delegates to the Constitutional Convention to make reasonable changes and also talk to the monitor about making reasonable changes to the system that we have because it's just not working.
The reason I ask is people need to understand what we have to lose if this referendum doesn't pass, the importance of this referendum vote.
You'll never see a good contract improvement again.
Yeah.
Right.
And people
look at what the International Union is under the gun right now, and look at what they did in their contract negotiations with Volvo.
Yeah.
I mean, those folks had the guts to vote it down by 90% knowing they were going to be put back out on strike. And then while they were on strike, they voted it down again by 60%. But the International kept bringing the same contract back to them. They refused to bargain for the membership on the issues that the membership wanted. They bargained on what they wanted to agree to with the company and then forced it down their throat. And you'll get more of that if you don't change this system.
Isn't that basically also what they did at Volvo?
I'm sorry, what?
Basically what they did at Volvo as well?
That's what I was talking about.
Oh, I didn't catch the name.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Volvo. They shoved the same contract down their throats four times, and finally it passed by 15 votes.
But it's not just that they're going to keep negotiating just for the company, the UAW International, but what they're going to also do is they're going to take all the tier systems and see which one of those tiers gets to lose out on each contract.
Yeah, it's pitting workers against classes of workers
against
classes of workers. Divide and conquer.
Yep.
All right. Well,
Scott.
Again, thanks for having me on. And we'll
I want to say thank you to you for coming on the show and really putting this out here.
You're welcome.
As a retiree, we can't get in to really talk to the active members. I do talk to some active members, and they do go out and spread the word, but it's really hard for us to get to them.
Yeah, and, your retiree contacts are important, too. Make sure that you're contacting them. The active members, there's people in the plants that are working on it. And, of course, you could help by joining one of our text banks or phone banks. Do you get emails from us, Adrian?
Yes, I do.
Okay, yeah. Sign up for one of those.
I'm a person that try to stay neutral. I try to stay neutral, so I stay away from caucuses. But I hear everything that you all are saying, and it's not that I don't agree with you, because I agree with most of what's going on. I really want to see one member, one vote. That's democratic.
The way to do it is spread the word.
Yes, that's
great.
All we can do right now, spread the word and have explanations.
Yep. Okay, well, good night, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And we'll talk soon.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much,
Scott.
You know, one thing everybody needs to really realize, all of us people, we don't always get together, but you know what? Aren't we all agreeing? We need to get this shit passed.
Yes, here. It's important. This is an opportunity. It's like I dare say, once in a lifetime. Wouldn't you say?
Well, we're looking at that. You've had a caucus, the administration caucus, which has changed its name, but they've been in power for 70 years, and in 70 years. Well, we could just go back to the last
30, 40 years, it has not, it is not in the best interest of the membership. All these concessionary contracts, you know, concessions made, you never get the concessions back, you were lied to, that as soon as they became profitable, they would return your concessions. And your people that are in your executive board don't seem to be fighting to get those things back.
Right.
We do.
And you know, you're on something there, Adrian. You know, we call them pattern agreements that, you know, we get from one corporation to another corporation and so on and so forth. I think it's a pattern agreement the way they've been doing this at Solidarity House since 1985. That pattern is the same. I think it's safe to say, with all the concessions we've had over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Want to butt in for a second, Scott. This is, thank you, Cinnamon. She told me, she's listening, she said, you're kind of, I'm not putting my sentences together. Well, I got a medical thing going on, and I do get scatterbrained when I talk sometimes. So I hope you forgive me and get the gist of what I'm trying to say. So carry on, Scott.
Oh, we're understanding you, Don. We're understanding you.
Okay, well. Now, I just want people to know. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, like ZZ Top told you, don't let that shit go to your head. Keep talking, brother.
That's right.
That's right. As long as I can find the porn pages, I'll be fine. Go ahead.
I'm just know that's right.
Oh, damn, Adrian.
Well, you know, Paul's been to, what, two conventions?
I was a delegate to the 2006 Constitutional Convention, the 2007 Bargaining Convention, and the 2014 Constitutional Convention and 2015 Bargaining Convention. You know, so the thing is, I know firsthand what a joke it is. In 2006, when I went to the Constitutional Convention, we were in the midst of what did we lose? About 40,000 workers at Delphi,
yeah.
And but a handful of us tried to bring some discussion to the convention floor about what we could do to fight back, but we couldn't even get enough delegates to back the idea to even bring it up for discussion. That's how pathetic the convention is. That's,
wow.
That's how much control the International Executive Board has over these people. And
or talk about the childishness of it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
When
well,
they bring the clap, if you're bringing some kind of opposition, they try to drown you out, right?
Yeah. Well, I was simply appalled. I wouldn't play the game because when you get to speak – what they would do is stand up and praise the regional director, assistant regional director, on and on, what great leaders they were. And I just simply stood up and spoke. You know, one of the biggest jokes was that I was only one of three people to speak against taking $60 million out of our strike fund to put it in the general fund. I told the delegates that my local went on strike in 1998 for 54 days, and I knew what a strike fund was for, and I wasn't going to go back to my plant and tell people that I backed this foolishness. But only two other people were willing to speak against it. You have, like, you know, 12 or 1,300 delegates there. That's what a mess it is. People are afraid to speak.
Yep.
And that's what people need to hear about how dysfunctional that system is.
Yeah.
Well,
it's dysfunctional.
Scott Holderson himself was on the last convention floor and brought up items that was on the agenda that was supposed to be followed, and they took them off the agenda, and some of it had to do with money, financing, and that was pulled right off. And he couldn't get any, he could, like you couldn't get enough support.
Yeah. had discussion on it. Well, one man, one vote in 2014, he tried to bring up that issue. You know, just,
right.
You know, you can't get any backing.
Right, right. You know, because we got our eye on you downtown. You know, we're watching you.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, I think people need to understand that we really have to get our contracts renegotiated, because the reason we keep going backward is in our international agreement, our union has agreed to work toward continuous improvement. They're doing that in order to get joint funds. If they don't work toward continuous improvement, if they don't work toward management's goals, management will cut off the joint funds. And we need the conditions of jointness renegotiated. There's nothing wrong with jointness if everybody benefits, including the worker, but only our international union and management benefit from jointness. Retirees don't benefit from it. Workers on a plant floor don't benefit from it. All the good jobs have been bargained away. I don't know how a person can even hire in at 18 and work, what is now, don't you have to work till 70 to get Social Security? How are you going to survive at that pace for 50 years?
Right.
You don't. You tell them you start hearing voices like I did.
Yeah.
No, I'm being serious.
Yeah.
I'm hearing voices.
Yeah.
You know,
get out
but
early.
That's such a dismal spot for those people that come in and work.
Yeah.
That they are not, they got to work till they're that age.
Yeah.
Man, where's the hope there?
Well, it's okay if you got work you're capable of doing, if you still had sub-assembly, if you still had booth cleaners, if you still had sanitation and all these other jobs that they've outsourced. You know, you can easily work till you're 70. It used to be you worked in an assembly plant for a few years. You're able to get off the line. So when you were in, say, be a janitor, so when you're 60 years old and had a prostate the size of a watermelon, you could go pee any time you wanted to. You didn't have to hold your hand and wait for 3 hours to get a relief mat.
Hell, at this
right.
point, at my plant, they're giving up relief tag relief jobs at my plant.
They're doing what?
Yeah, the tag relief people, this is what they're doing. They're doing away with tag relief jobs, and now the company's like, oh, well, if we they'll have a backup tag, right, then?
Yeah.
So if that person that had that classification, they go find another job somewhere else. So what they did in my building was half of the building on the south end does tag relief, and then the other half lost all their tags. So all the tag people had to bump people or go to those tag jobs that were available down on the south end.
Yeah.
So now what's been going on is the tag, the backup, quote-unquote, tag person on the line, because the real tag person left.
Yeah.
Every once in a while when the company decides it just needs to tag relief down at that end of the building,
yeah,
all of a sudden now we're not mass relieving, but we're going to tag relief today.
Well, they gave
How crazy
that up
is that?
In most of your plants decades ago. You know, the thing is that was a high seniority job because you had variety. You had longer breaks, your body didn't take the beating, and that's just an example of what we've given up, our union's given up voluntarily over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You wouldn't recognize it. If you hired into a plant now, you would have no concept of what a plant was like in 1978.
No.
There were so many good jobs. There's just the only good jobs left are appointed jobs or leaders, And most people don't have the stomach for bossing their coworkers around, don't want to be leaders.
Hey
Don,
can
you put me in the green room?
What was that?
Don, can I talk to you in the green room, sweetheart?
Sure. Hang on. I'll put you in there in
a second. Thank
you, baby. All right. Go ahead, guys.
Speaking of which, what happened over at, is it Sharp? Is it
where?
Local? What with the team leaders? What did I see posted? Was it at local? Did anybody see that? Was that local 1700 maybe? Or is that a local? I don't know. Somebody had it posted about how is it? Where's Sharp? What's the local there?
Where at?
I know that on one of the pages, there was an article put out about the team leaders.
Really?
How they're doing away with some of them.
Hmm.
Dang, which article was it? Did anybody else see that on here?
Uh-uh. That's why I'm really interested.
Saved it. I have to go through it. I'll look for the article, and if I can find it, then I'll forward it.
Right.
What was it about again?
They're doing away with some of the team leaders.
Yeah, I see the article where they were saying something about the team leaders.
Well, the team leader, Scott, did they? I thought the last contract in the GM, I thought that was going to be mandated by the numbers of the people in the plant. So if your plant's getting smaller, yeah, you're not going to need 50 team leaders. I mean, I know they're, in my humble opinion, I just see they're going to go down. If the work in the plant's going to go down, you're not going to need, you know, five team leaders if you only got two, mm-hmm. one line running, say. If that's
right.
where you're going. But.
Or if you bring a supplier from outside in-house and that work goes to the supplier, then that's less people working for the corporation. So that means less team leaders are going to be needed.
Oh, yeah, and that would fall under core or non-core then.
Hmm. I'll look for that.
Yeah, that'd be a real interesting read. I didn't catch that.
Well, it
but
was posted like
core or non-core, because like said, you know, and you said, if you're bringing in a part that's already half-assed, some assembled, we have nothing to do other than bring the package to the line, per se. And,
right.
Yeah, we won't have anybody involved in that other than you might have somebody at the gate that should check that and gauge that stuff to make sure it meets our parameters. We used to have that at Metal Fab, but, hell, that got thrown out the window, really. Well, they still have it, but the person got bombarded so hard they couldn't keep up.
Yeah, that don't happen no more. We don't have inspectors for that no more. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
To be honest with you, Scott, if we would have had that, you would have never got bad hood latches from us, but they took that person out of our loop.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, this one member, one vote is very, I can't just stress just how important this really is. It's paramount that this gets passed through, because if it does not get through, then we as the members have an even larger uphill battle, and the status quo will stay.
It'll get worse. It'll get worse because they're going to take total control. Because, you know, in my humble opinion, and seeing all the money they're spending over in Germany to learn how they're doing the work councils over there, and if you remember what was the Gettelfinger that said it, we can run all the plants from Detroit. That way the wheel slows right down. By the time your grievance gets to Detroit,
Then they dog and pony show you there, and it slows down more and more. Then you die, so they don't have to judge you. I'm just putting a real pretty picture on there, people. If you don't support this, you think your union moves slow now? Wake up, Herman, because that shit's going to be like molasses in January and at the North Pole.
And I dare say, I'm going to go on a limb on this one, but I'm going to dare say there might even be some retribution to pay for this. You know what I mean? How dare you members try this?
A lot of people need to remember our union was founded on repetitions, was it not?
Well, yeah, but
I'm not saying it's deservedly for, but I think we need to stand up as a whole, be heard. Like I said, you heard it tonight. You heard a lot of us that don't believe on everything that I say or everything that I'm going to just throw names out there. Joe, John, Chuck, Grion, or that rebel rouser guy that you call me. But we all agree on this one. Think about it. When all the people say the same thing, we can get some harmony here. We need it.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. Like Melissa said earlier, if you was gone, you could bring in a doctor's excuse. That's no longer accepted. That's no longer accepted. You know, I had a heart attack. I was in the hospital for the last 2 days. Yeah, but I'm back now. Well, we're sorry. You're on notice.
You're in the attendance program, baby. Wake up.
Well, you need to come in and puke all over the foreman's shoes.
Yeah, you do that.
I convince him you're actually sick.
Yeah, but then you get wrote up for that for making a mess.
That's about the situation right there. That's about the situation.
Carrie, I seen that done, and the woman got wrote up for puking in the office. So don't think that's going to be your way out either, because I literally seen that done on second shift at Fab. The chick come in, told her foreman she wasn't feeling good, and I mean, she just barked. She didn't get the supervisor, but it went all over the table, all over her desk, all over the keyboard, and that poor girl got the balance in three because that's what her record was up for, and I couldn't believe that.
Wow.
My God.
You know?
Well, at least they'd believe she was sick then.
Yeah. Well, Paul, you seen it with your own eyes with me that time. Me and you agreed to meet at the local because, honestly saying, people, me and Paul have a deal now. I don't go there alone, and he don't go there alone. You know what I mean? So we were going there to sign up for me to run and him to run at the convention, one as alternate, one as delegate. I go home, I'm on third shift, and I get a message on my phone when I wake up saying I got to report to the plant doctor. I go and report to the plant doctor. She put me off for 30 days so I couldn't campaign.
My God.
Yeah, and then they wouldn't even pay me workers' comp. I go, well, the plant doctor put me out.
So when does the plant doctor supersede your own doctor?
Well, they do for 30 days on any. They do for 30 days on any injury in the plant. Unfortunately, so. But that plant doctor, last I knew, because she said I had the flu for 30 days after getting hit by ILO, and last I knew, she was down there in D. What do they call that? DHAM or something or whatever now.
Yeah.
Because right before I retired, the attorney subpoenaed her, and she no longer worked where she used to work. You know, that's what General Motors does, people. When they have a problem person on the salary side of the house, they don't fire them. Know this. They move them.
They move them.
Mm-hmm.
Relocate.
Believe me, they do it at Ford and Chrysler also.
Correct, Adrian. Yep. You're right.
Yeah, they've been doing that for years.
You don't think they owe these people something? Carrie, that's part of bargaining. When your committee man walks out on Saturday an hour before the end of the shift, yeah, he's getting paid for an hour and a half, you know, but he owes, or they owe. You start letting them buy you, you owe. Well, I might not have to sell out a
an employee right or a member right, but I had to give up a group grievance. I had to give up a health and safety grievance. Had
right.
to do all this, had to do that. You know, mm-hmm. so many people don't
That's
understand. Well, just because nobody got hurt, nothing got hurt. Nothing was changed.
Right.
Think about every concession. Adrian tipped on it. Did you not, honey? What concession? Mm. Name one we got back. People, please speak up.
None.
The crickets. Crickets.
Yes.
Number crickets. Hey, real quick before we, you know, because we're going to be over at 8:30. Real quick, I want to change subject real quick if I can. The Nabisco strike is over. Members of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and the Grain Millers International Union, the BCTGM, working for Nabisco, Mondelez in Portland, Oregon, Aurora, Colorado, Richmond, Virginia, and Chicago, Illinois, and Norcross, Georgia, have voted overwhelmingly to accept a new collective bargaining agreement. Approval of the contract ends the strike against Nabisco, which began on August 10th. So
I
you can go and
got,
get your... Huh?
Sorry, God. I'm sorry to interrupt. We got Brian on the line, I believe. That's Brian's number?
That is correct. Hello.
Hey,
Brian.
How are you doing?
Well, we got Easter Monday back. That's it.
Yes. That's all right. Forgot about that one.
Yeah, I did too.
I figured I'd jump in and let you know.
Thanks.
It should never been taken away anyway. Should have never been taken away anyway. So yeah, you're right.
Well, I agree. None of it should have been taken away. Unfortunately, with all the lies and deceit from the leadership and the threats, you know, I mean, you can't make a formed, educated vote if your leadership's lying and deceiving you.
Correct.
So that's how these tentative agreements get voted in, because they're lying, deceiving, and threatening the membership.
Right. Right.
So, and as far as constitutional amendments or any type of leadership reform, again, you got the delegates down there as pawns doing as the leadership tells them, at least the majority of the delegates. I'm not going to say all of them, but... So that's why we need to support the one member, one vote, because we know the delegate system does not work. It hasn't worked in the last 42 years. It's time to make this change. I think it's only right that the membership decide who the leadership is going to be. And, you know, until the federal oversight lays out the rules of the convention, we're not going to know how this plays out, how people that are going to be able to campaign if they decide they want to run for the president or the vice president or even for the executive board. So we just got to wait until the rules get rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the Solidarity House was talking about a 2-week delay in this referendum. And those ballots were supposed to be sent, mail-in ballots were supposed to be sent out on the 12th. And I haven't heard anybody say they got their ballots yet, so I'm wondering if the one member, one vote did get the 2-week extension.
They got it bumped a week, according to Scott Holderson, I believe it, wasn't it? They got moved from the 12th to the 19th being mailed out, and then the recount. We won't know about the results until I believe it was the 29th of November.
Correct.
But then the monitor is asking people, if you want to be part of this process, there was an email address given.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, right now, the ball's in the membership's hands. So hopefully the membership is finally going to listen to you guys and support the one member, one vote, because if they don't do that, and you're going to sit there and rely on the UAW Constitution after the fact, good luck on that, because it's not going to work the way they think it's going to work. This is going to be our last chance to reform this.
Yep.
Brian, today did you go to your union meeting?
Yes, I did.
Did they bring that up at your union meeting today, the one member, one vote?
No.
Yep, that's how it was. Well, I believe somebody
one of the rules from the oversight, the federal oversight, is the union cannot push either system. So I don't think under the federal oversight rules that they're even allowed to bring it up at the union meetings.
But can't you as
but
a member bring it up?
Asks. But if a member asks, yeah.
Well, you can have the membership bring it up, but, I mean, if the leadership can't discuss it, it's, you know.
Mute point.
They're going to say it's out of order. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. And we've got
so
multiple
now all
plants.
The members.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
So all the members, all we have now at this point to push the one member, one vote is each other. We have to,
correct.
We all have to come together. Retirees, active workers, we got to do this.
Well, Adrian said, it's hard for the retirees to reach the active workers. But the retirees are basically going to have to talk to each other in order to support that. And the active workers are going to have to educate each other in order to support that as well.
That's right.
So, I mean, we're talking about how many, Adrian? 400,000 retirees?
At least. Yes.
That's a lot of
retirees. They outnumber the active workers, that's for sure. Oh,
absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, that really could tilt the whole outcome of this one member, one vote. Even when you start looking outside of the auto workers.
Right.
When you look at the retirees and then you look at, say, the municipalities or the universities or the casinos, as long as we have the retirees, that could tilt the vote. And
it could end up supporting the one member, one vote.
Which I hope
without
that
a doubt,
being
Brian,
the
because the numbers are showing a lot of people are way off from what I'm seeing. It says there are 400,000 active GM UAW. It says there's 117,000 Ford and 81,000 Chrysler. I don't have anything about John Deere. I don't have anything about Caterpillar or farther. I don't have anything about
John
down
Deere.
The road. But think about
okay,
that.
Okay, so let me say this.
If we get 30% of them, we kick their ass.
Let me say this. Retirees, you remember that you're paying more into your health care. You haven't received anything in a pension increase in many, many years. You lost COLA and you lost the Christmas bonus. You don't get a pension and you don't get health care, period, when you retire.
Correct.
Temps don't get nothing. Active workers, I mean, when you think about us as a whole, we lost COLA, time and a half after eight, the job bank, skill trade got combined. What else did we lose?
Your dignity.
Well,
okay.
I mean, that's absolute. But so we all lost something. We all lost something. We all got something to gain. Let's remember what our common interests are, because no matter whether you're SBU, your skilled trade, your retiree, tier one, tier two, or even a temp, we all share the same common interests, and we got to remember what we share in common to bring us together, and we got to push this one member, one vote. This is the only way we're going to reform this union.
Yep.
Agreed. And Brian, isn't it sad? I think a lot of people here could say most of the retirees that fought hard to get what we got, that stuff is all gone from the active, most of it's gone from the active workers now. So everything that they did and worked hard for, if you're a retiree out there, most of the stuff that you help to put in place for us continuing active workers is now no longer for us. Those plans have changed. The union has changed. It's sad.
Well, that's where
and
we go back to.
And it pisses people like my father-in-law off that fought for that shit. that went on strike and fought for all of us to have it. So, I mean, chuck somebody like that old man and he's hot.
That's where we go back to the leadership, because they're the only ones that stand between us and the companies we work for, whether you're John Deere, the Ford, GM, or Chrysler, whatever. The leadership is what stands between us and what we get in our contracts, our grievances, or anything else for that matter.
I agree with that.
If the leadership has been lying, deceiving, and just outright bargaining our contracts in bad faith, coming and threatening the membership, stealing from us, and intertwining themselves with the very companies we work for, I mean, it's kind of hard for the membership to make an educated vote. But now that the information is out that the corruption, the collusion, the nepotism all took place, the contracts were bargained in bad faith, now all that information is out, we need to focus on the one member, one vote, and we need to support it.
Here, here.
Correct.
Agreed.
Because the reality is this. If the retirees haven't received anything in their pension, and they've taken concessions, and Tier 2 does not get a pension or health care, and temps don't get nothing, believe me when I say this, it's going to backfire on Tier 1 and possibly the retirees. We need to start bringing the membership together, fighting for each other for what we share in common, so we can hold on to what we got and fight for what we've lost. Otherwise, we're all going to end up losing at the end of this, divided. And that, to me, just don't make sense. So it's a membership's call at the end of the day. We're either going to come together or we're going to let the companies and we're going to let the leadership divide us and strip us of everything that our past union brothers and sisters fought so hard to gain.
True.
And he's right.
So years ago when I talked about going through the Solidarity House gate and I told everybody time wasn't on our side, that's factual because time ain't on our side. You see what's going on with the economy, the shortage of parts, semiconductors, plant closings, jobs going overseas, the middle class is shrinking, our purchasing power is shrinking, time is not on our side. When autonomous and electrical vehicles come out, there's going to be more job losses. When I brought up on my page, do not work the holidays, people got an argument with me. Now GM, Ford, and Chrysler building up stock, and there's going to be big layoffs coming in the near future.
And you can tell Tier 1, you better worry about the new hires coming in, because if they get offered a buck raise or something, they'll take that crap and vote them right the hell down. Vote them.
Right.
Absolutely.
They will us.
Yeah. That's why we need to help each other and educate each other and come together for what we share in common. Because the last thing we need to do is leave Tier 2 or the new hirees coming in with nothing because we didn't stand. We need to stand together because
we can't let them divide us, Brian. Brian, we can't let them divide us. If they divide us, them pricks win.
I agree. And they have
divided
us.
We already divided. We got to bring each other back together.
Yes.
Correct.
But
so the only way to bring each other back together is to keep talking and tell the history. We have to tell the history.
And I'm still, you know, I'm still apt to where I think the membership need to talk about the solutions or the issues, the solutions, and how to implement those solutions. But I also think that the membership need to use whatever rights they have, and that includes a concerted protected activity under the National Labor Relations Act. I think off of company time, each local, with or without your local leadership, need to organize and get in front of us. Out in front of every region around this country and out in front of the Solidarity House, the new one that they got in Southfield that they're using at this point, and start sounding off and let their voices be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, look, like I said, it's one thing for us to be scared of the Solidarity House, the leadership. If we continue to stay scared of them, then they're going to conquer us. If we make them to where they're scared of us, they're going to be forced to do their job because they know there's only one way and out of that building to that parking lot. So a lot of people bled and died for this union, fought for the things that we've gained, and now we're giving it all back because nobody's willing to fight to get those things back or to even keep what we have.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, you don't put nothing into it, you don't get nothing out of it. You're not willing to fight? Well, guess what? The Solidarity House and the company don't mind a free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to take it off the backs of you. Because like I said, when Chrysler admitted guilt, that $30 million fine that they got to pay came off the backs of the workers through concessionary contracts. That's a drop in the bucket for them. All the legal mm-hmm. bills that Norwood and General Holyfield and Dennis Williams and Gary Jones and all of them ran up, the membership paid for that.
That's right.
And I think that's a good point. People need to understand that all this money that has to be paid back, it's not being paid back by the people that got 31, 33, whatever it is, raises. It's the people on the floors working. It's not international they had to pay that money back. The people
it makes
got
no sense.
Big raises.
It makes no sense as a member that you would support people getting a 31% raise increase and you are not getting 3%.
Thank you, Adrian.
Right? That makes no
exactly.
sense. But,
exactly.
you know.
We've been taking concessions contract after contract, but the delegates, the majority of delegates decided they're going to let the leadership get a 31% salary increase off the backs of us. And not just the concessionary contracts, but our union wages, our union dues being increased as well.
That's correct. Oh, yeah, that's right. Remember, the union dues were supposed to go back to 2 hours once it, what was the figure, 800?
Yeah, 800,000, but the way they're letting
800
them take
million,
that money.
Right,
800 million, but the way they're letting them play with that money now and they're using it for even the referendum vote, they got that amended in the Constitution, I hear. It's radically changed. My question is, if somebody threw out this little seed to me and it's spinning in my squirrel cage, somebody help me. Our contracts, we get a 3% raise 1 year, then we get a little bit of money the second year, then another 3 or whatever, just 3 or 4%. And he goes, how do we know their 31% raise isn't every year of this contract?
Yep. Agree.
Where's the paperwork on that? Where is the paperwork on that?
The way I looked at it, it's 31% a year.
That's the way I'm saying, honey. And the only way we can see that is if we can see that agreement with the international staff. And like a jackass, I can't find it. I know it exists, but you can't get one
that
I know of.
Well, for one, you would have to go to the Solidarity House and ask for the minutes. And it should have the language in there from the last Constitutional Convention. Two, when we look at the fact that they increased our union dues and we've taken concessionary contracts and they keep getting a salary increase every Constitutional Convention, and then, you know, they turned around, they had corruption in Vegas, they had corruption in Palm Springs, California, and just 3 weeks ago they decided to go to
Florida,
a nice resort in Florida. All that interest to that strike fund is going to a general fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they're living large off the backs of every single one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But doesn't
and that's
it,
on
they
top of that
31%
salary increase.
Oh, God. Doesn't it baffle anybody that right now there's a monitor and they just went to Florida?
No, that don't baffle me because you know what? They're arrogant, they're self-serving,
yeah.
and they think they can't be touched.
That's correct.
Okay. But I'm saying what's baffling about it to me is that there's supposed to be a monitor. Well, don't they think that's us? that they got to travel so far to have themselves a little meet and greet?
Okay, so it's called a perception, right? We all know what perception is. Well, think about the class action lawsuit that we filed and the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board based off of corruption and bargaining our contracts in bad faith. So Chrysler admits guilt, $30 million in fines, 16 indictments and oversight on the UAW, which we're paying for that oversight as well. So here it is, the federal government has got a complaint, and they have a case, but it was the membership that got screwed over, and the class
action
lawsuit got dismissed, and our complaint out of Washington, D.C. with the National Labor Relations Board got shut down as well. We don't have a complaint.
That's right.
Well, how about the money that I heard, read, that was overseas? I haven't heard another word.
The offshore accounts.
Yeah.
The offshore accounts.
Well, you know, because the U.S. government don't have jurisdiction overseas, there's no way for them to find out if that was actually true or not.
That's not true.
I mean, there's no.
That's not true.
What do you mean it's not true?
That is not true.
They can find out.
They have all they got into. Oh gosh. I'm trying to think of his name. He's in prison right now. He hit a lot of money. Yeah, he hit a lot of money over, you know, offshore accounts, and government went right in there to get it, especially in the German bank.
It depends which country, though. So if it's in Germany or it's a Swiss bank account or something, yeah, they might be able to find out. But if it's in other countries, there's a good possibility they're not going to be. They all got different rules.
You're probably right about that.
Right.
Well, you got to think he had an accountant as our president, so he probably knew more banks than any of us would ever know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mr. Jones.
I think they do have overseas bank accounts. I really do. But even outside of that, when you look at the fact that when they get out of prison, they still got their two pensions, it baffles me that the Solidarity House, like Rory Gamble or Ray Curry, nobody's gone after their pensions.
Boy Network, they're not going to do that.
Well, my thing is, they got those pensions under defrauding the membership. They didn't earn those pensions. They defrauded the membership, and those pensions should be taken away.
Correct.
Oh, I agree.
Well, they all are fearful, because the deal is, if you go to take away my pension, I'll spill the beans on you so you lose yours.
Mm-hmm. Right. They might do that anyway.
That's what it boils down to. They've all got dirt on each other.
Well, this is the thing. You have a tier system. Don already brought it up. If we don't take care of these younger people, and they give them a couple dollar raise, what do you think is going to happen to ours? Our pensions
That's
are only
correct.
Guaranteed for what, half?
It's already
only
happening.
Insured for half.
It's really already happening.
Yeah.
That's how they're passing these contracts. There's no good.
Yes. Yeah. They said it was the best contracts we've ever gotten, even though they've taken the pensions, they've taken the health care for the new people when they retire. They've taken COLA, time and a half after eight, the job bank, you name it, they've taken it. But these are supposed to be the best contracts we've ever had.
And you're not full-time permanent for 8 years?
Right.
Well,
Yeah, and then the temps, you know, they don't get rolled over until every 3 years now. But if they get laid off prior, they got to start
right.
over.
Mm-hmm.
Perpetual hiring. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. The membership.
And Brian, I don't think there's any language how long they can keep you as a temp.
Yeah, there is.
Is there?
It's 3 years.
Yeah.
What is that
3 years.
Language? 3 years?
Yeah.
Because I brought this up last time I was on. I know people that hired in at my plant that have been temps for a long time. But their cousin got hired in that Michigan Assembly and got hired in after 90 days.
That language didn't come into existence until this last contract.
And one of the other things about contracts too, and I'm speaking of Ford right now, there are special exceptions in the contract for different facilities, such as MAP, such as DeRouge. They have special exceptions. Edison, New Jersey, they have special exceptions.
Yep, they do.
And Brian, as Brian said, within that 3 years, if you get laid off for a certain period of time, your time starts all over again. 30 days, and it starts all over again.
31st day, right.
Boom. So I you didn't make it. Maybe the next 3 years you'll make it.
Right.
But isn't that kind of discriminating if you have a contract, but it says excluding the Rouge plant? Excluding whatever other plant. Wait a minute. So discriminating. So wait a minute. That don't even make sense in its own self.
It makes sense because those facilities have more than one facility on those in those areas. It's not like Rossinville, for instance. Rossinville got one plant.
Right.
So they make exceptions to where there are, I don't know how to say this other than, I'll just say a complete battery of facilities. Like the Rouge, you have, what, 8 different or 9, 10 different facilities there? It's
mm-hmm.
a city
right.
in its own.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Edison, New Jersey is like that also. And like I say, Wayne, out in Wayne, you got Michigan Truck, Wayne Assembly, you got a stamping plant. So those facilities are different because they're
right.
cities within themselves, so to speak.
But would they do those exclusions like that, what's right for one building? It's all the same land. So each building has their own set of what can be done and what can't be done. Because I know the stamping plant is ran a lot more efficiently than the assembly plant.
Well, you got to remember that these international contracts and the local contracts as well, they're
mm-hmm.
divisive. They're
right.
there to divide the membership, and that's exactly what they're doing.
And
a different set of rules for a certain group of people.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
These contracts written like that, they've been written many, many, many years where they separated those out.
Yep.
And it seems to be the money makers. The plants that are money makers have those exclusions.
Because they have the most bodies there.
Yeah.
Largest
Correct.
Local unions. Like the
mm-hmm.
Rouge Complex.
Where all the money.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know?
And then the amalgamation
yeah.
is another thing that comes in there. So.
Yeah. I mean, you look at my plant, you know, at Flint Assembly, there's 5,500 people at our plant. That's over 10% of General Motors' workforce
mm-hmm.
in one facility.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But
that's weird. That's weird, Sam.
You know, Brian, are you getting extra time off this week?
Am I getting what?
Are you getting time off this week? Are you off this next week?
No, I work for the parts supplier, so I don't get extra time off.
All right. I'm seeing everybody's getting it. Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, everybody's getting extra time off this week, and some people.
Yeah, that's all production.
Right. Okay. All right. I mean, Lansing Delta's down for another 2 weeks. They're not going back till October 6th or something like that. And, yeah, it is what it is. you know, got a chip shortage because we don't want to make our own stuff here no more. So that bit him in the butt. But
yeah, it did.
You know, which is really kind of funny talking about that chip shortage because, you know, the Kokomo plant here in Indiana used to make those chips. Now what's funny is they don't do that. I mean, it's funny, but it's not funny. But now all of our trucks are sitting in the Kokomo plant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're all over Indiana.
A facility also in Texas that made those chips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That crane caught on fire.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you right now, if the economy were to collapse, you know, both GM, Ford, and Chrysler would take a big loss having all these cars sitting out in these empty fields with no parts.
Boy, that's
tough. Well, they're already talking about we're getting ready to go into a recession.
We've been in a recession.
Well, I think it's going to be worse than that, but that's just me.
I agree with you, Brian. It is.
Before we get to the end of the show, you know, we're talking about all the doom and gloom. Let's talk about something a little happy for a second.
I had sex.
LA,
funny, tomorrow, no rain.
Hey, Don,
young lady,
Don, we didn't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I apologize.
That's not a happy moment for us.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
A young lady by the name of Lana Scott is going to be on NBC's The Voice, and it's going to premiere tomorrow night. She is the daughter of a millwright named Bob Scott of LAP. So we have a union daughter that's going to be on The Voice tomorrow night. So
what are they going
to talk? I wanted to put that out there. You know what The Voice is? It's a singing competition.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, is it singing? No, never mind.
Singing, yes, singing.
Wow. If we keep talking, are we going to go another half hour or two?
No.
Are you actually going to cut us off? No,
yeah.
we're
don't be a stranger. Don't be a stranger.
Yep, Brian.
I'm glad you came on. Brian?
Stranger is in the
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
I called you. Damn it.
No, you're fine. I mean, you know, between running my page and put Facebook lives and then going to work and taking care of what I got to take care of at home, it's been kind of busy lately. But
yeah, quit putting a picture of your daughter up. That isn't right.
What do you
mean? She's beautiful.
She's gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Yes.
And I keep saying I wonder who her daddy is.
She takes after her daddy.
That's good. That's a good part.
Yeah, can you imagine me in a skirt?
Oh,
no. No. You mean a kill?
I can't say that.
Caitlin's twin.
Hey, don't judge. Don't judge.
Oh, boy. Poor Missy.
I got nice legs.
Hey, maybe you can run for governor of Michigan then.
Oh boy. I think we have veered off into a lane that is worse than what I said earlier. So it's grabbed the reins back.
You started it, Don.
That's right. You did, Don.
You did, Don. You mentioned something about a jar of peanut butter.
What I sure did.
In a football.
My goodness. You folks, it's Sunday and here you talking like that. You're going to hell, that's for sure.
Wow.
Well, let's just tell it like it is. No, Brian, well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you came on. And anytime, you know that, anytime.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I'm sure Paul's happy you're here, too.
Yeah, Paul, are you here late? We're glad that you stayed with us.
Oh, yeah. He got me around his favorite Rebel Rousers.
Yeah, it's kind of Sunday. When we don't have a show, I don't know what to do.
Well, you know, they're every week now.
I know, but I really suffered in the summer.
Boy.
With the withdrawals.
He's really stretching it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, the BS is flowing today.
Yeah.
Well.
Hey, on that note, I do
quiet.
Want to comment everybody on how good I think this show was on educating the people on what to expect and what's coming up and the reasons why we need to do. And everybody, please, just go vote. Vote with your heart. Read what you got. Do the right thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And don't be gullible. Please don't be gullible enough to believe what the union leadership from Detroit or our locals are telling us about this, neither.
Right.
Yeah.
And
one of the issues I have on my page is I have this guy, Jimmy Hyde. He's a retired international staff member that's been trolling my page trying to give out wrong information. So if you guys are on these pages and you get international staff on these union pages trying to misinform you, they misinformed you over the last 40-something years. Stop listening to them.
Yeah, that's a fact.
You're here.
We have a former president of our union doing that the last contract. He was coming on telling everybody what a great – and then you guys went on strike, Scott – and he was saying, we need to come back. He was telling everybody, you got to vote for this contract. It's a great contract. I'm going, hey, Fidoa was his name. You remember
Fidoa?
Well,
Don, think about what Brian
Ralph Lake was the same way.
Well, think about what you just said, Brian. They're not supposed to go one way or another. You think about what you just said versus what Holderson said before you came in. They're not supposed to comment either way, but yet Curry's already came right out and said openly he is against it. He's telling his people to be against it.
Well, but he used the newspaper.
So the matter. He still said it publicly.
The federal oversight said you can't use any union funds or whether it's on a letterhead or whatever. You cannot put what side of what you support.
How can you tell this guy we don't have the power to get to the newspapers like Homeboy, and we ain't going to get on our knees like Homeboy to get that kind of advertisement on why to vote for one member of one vote?
Look, I mean, they're finding loopholes in it, right? But the federal oversight's not doing anything about it. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
I wish
go to the gates. Where'd you say? It's in Southfield now? Post the address.
Yep.
I'll be there at 8 a.m., Herman.
Well, they're probably working from home.
Oh, for the most part, yeah.
Or Vegas.
Oh,
or Florida.
That's why they're not answering no calls.
Well, we got about 30 seconds left.
We got 1 minute.
Can you help me out? I'm hung up in one of the governor's roundabouts here. Where am I going?
Good night, you rabble rousers.
Well,
hey,
I'll give you the
good night, everybody. Take care.
Good night,
bless
good night, Misty. Good night,
Carrie.
Adrian.
Thank
you. Good night, honey.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Purdue. I see you tomorrow. No, when Sunday. Good night,
Tuesday?
Everybody. I know you know what day it is.
Good night, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Goddamn, how do I turn off? Well, you're going to throw us off here in a second, kids. I think.